This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Trump, as well as House Republicans and Democrats, are reacting Sunday to the first week of impeachment hearings targeting President Trump. Democrats say that testimony during the hearings confirmed the president abused power by allegedly withholding military aid to Ukraine in exchange for dirt on a political rival. Republicans say the proceedings have provided no hard evidence of wrongdoing. VOA's Arash Sarabasati reports.
President Trump continued defending his now infamous July phone call.
I was getting off the plane and they handed me a statement that was just made by the foreign minister and president of the Ukraine. And Ukraine, they came out loud and clear that there was no linkage whatsoever, not even a little bit. And you saw it. You all saw it. I said, that ends the impeachment.
Sunday, Republican Chris Stewart said withholding aid to Ukraine made sense at the time. Democrat Sean Patrick Maloney says the president withheld aid for different reasons.
That the president of the United States used taxpayer-funded military assistance to pressure a foreign leader to help him in his reelection campaign. That is solicitation of a bribe, and that is an impeachable offense listed in the Constitution.
The White House released a transcript of an earlier phone call between President Trump and then newly elected Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, saying the readout of that call debunks accusations of bribery. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Lebanon slipped deeper into a political crisis Sunday as politicians struggled to form a government. Tens of thousands of Lebanese took to the streets in cities and towns across the country to demand a complete overhaul of the political class. Protesters have accused political leaders of corruption, and they're demanding social and economic reforms and adequate basic services. This is VOA News. Hundreds of Hong Kong student protesters who had barricaded themselves at a university attempted to leave the besieged campus early Monday after an overnight standoff. As the students made what appeared to be a concerted effort to leave the campus of Hong Kong Polytechnic University, they were charged by police who fired the tear gas. VOA saw police arrest dozens of students who were detained with plastic wire ties around their wrists. Some were marched in front of reporters as they were taken away. Earlier, police said that they were arresting students on riot-related charges. Now, despite increasingly violent protests, Hong Kongers are set to vote in local elections this week. VOA's Bill Gallo reports.
The unrest is prompting questions about whether authorities will move ahead with this week's local elections, a crucial barometer of public opinion amid a wave of anti-government protests. Steve Vickers is a Hong Kong-based risk consultant.
It would be a grave error to cancel those elections. The district council elections are the most fundamental building block of democracy in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong's Beijing-friendly chief executive has record low approval ratings. And despite the violence, polls suggest the protesters still have widespread public support. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Hong Kong.
At least one Iraqi protester was killed and more than 30 others wounded Sunday amid renewed clashes on a key bridge in Baghdad. The protesters now have control of three bridges crossing the Tigris River toward the heavily fortified Green Zone, the seat of Iraq's government. Those protests that began in October over lack of jobs and public services have grown to include widespread corruption and income inequality. Demonstrators are now demanding the complete overhaul of the government. The protests have spread out of Baghdad into other cities in southern and central Iraq. Demonstrators across the country are blocking roads and disrupting businesses. Iran's supreme leader backed Sunday a government decision to increase fuel prices, which sparked deadly protests. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei blamed thugs for damaging property in protests that left at least two people dead. His comments come as the government shut off internet across Iran in an attempt to quell protest over the raising of government-set gasoline prices by 50%. In a televised address to the nation, he said that some had lost their lives without elaborating. He also ordered security forces to implement their task. Hundreds of Haiti's national police officers were in the streets of capital, Port-au-Prince, and the northern city of Cape Haitien Sunday, demanding better work conditions and a union to represent and defend their rights. This is the second time in a month that they've protested. Some officers say that the police are suffering because they don't enjoy the same benefits reserved for their leaders. And they don't have anyone to represent and defend them when they need them the most. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, November 18th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Protests in Guinea, opposition and civil society groups set conditions for any dialogue.
The first condition is to have all the leaders and all the members of FNDC to be free from prison.
Faya Milimuno is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party. A Liberian opposition senator says the collaborative opposition parties remain strong. A Sudanese law expert says some former officials could have been involved in money laundering. And Gambia releases a new draft constitution.
This constitution has to make sure that the way it is written is clear, it's unambiguous, and it is for all Gambians and everybody to know that the president cannot go beyond 2 terms.
Frederick Tandeng is a Gambian political analyst, and Nigerian tech entrepreneurs still struggle with basic business environment. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Guinea's opposition has again told a visiting Economic Community of West African States delegation that it will not negotiate with the government, nor end months of protest until President Alpha Condé meets a number of conditions. The ECOWAS delegation, which visited Guinea late last week, called for dialogue and a peaceful protest. This as there were more deadly protests last Thursday. Faya Milimuno is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, or FNDC. He says one of the conditions is the immediate freedom of all jailed FNDC members. Milimuno also says another condition is for President Condé to deliver a nationwide speech saying he has abandoned his alleged plan to change the constitution.
The first condition is to have all the leaders and all the members of FNDC to be free from prison. There are many in prison around the country. The second condition is to have an independent commission of investigation that will allow to know who has shot the bullet that killed so many people. And the third condition is to hear from the president in an official address to the nation, saying clearly that he has abandoned the project of changing the constitution and seeing the third term. If those three conditions are fulfilled on the FNDC side, we can stop the demonstration to go around the table and talk about the future of our country.
President Alpha Condé, I know you want him to talk about whether he wants a third term, but the president wants to have a constitutional referendum, a referendum that he thinks is part of democracy. Because if you want to decide something, the people must decide first what they want.
Here is the problem. For FNDC, we are not against the fact that a constitution can be modified and the modification to be adopted through the referendum. What we don't want is to have the president trash the current constitution to build another new constitution that would allow him to say, okay, we went from the third republic to the fourth republic, and then I can stand again for another term. That's what we are against. And he is in his second and last term. We are in November 2019. Only about 10 months left for him to go. We cannot accept any change of the constitution at this time.
The argument the government has made is that Guinea's current constitution was never voted upon by the Guinean people. So the president and the government wants the Guinean people to have the opportunity to vote on the constitution.
All the constitutions around the world were adopted by referendum. We know that for the fact. And we didn't tell the president he doesn't have the right to modify something in the constitution. But in the current constitution, there are things that cannot be changed. Those things are the number of terms one can have as a president, and the length of the term. We are not going to allow anybody to change the constitution and seek a third term.
Mr. Milimuno, thank you very much. We are always happy to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Faye Milimuno is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Gambia's Constitutional Review Commission over the weekend released the first draft of that country's new constitution to replace the 1997 constitution, which was approved during former President Yahya Jammeh's rule. Attempt to change presidential term limit is becoming an issue in a number of African countries. But as Pandere Umbai reports, Gambia's new draft constitution restricts presidential term to 2 terms.
Opinions have been divided over the newly released draft constitution. While some hailed the new document, others believe that it should be fine-tuned to meet the general interests of Gambians. Under the old constitution, there is no term limit for the presidency, but the new one prohibits self-perpetual rule. The president cannot rule beyond 10 years. Pa Samba Jau is a Gambian political analyst.
Based on the new constitution, the draft one, definitely you see that we have 2 terms. And I like the way that it has been cleverly worded to make sure that even if, let's say, for example, Mr. Barrow were to go within a second term, he would not be eligible to sit for a third term. And the other thing that I like about it, that is also part of the clauses in the constitution that are enshrined, where the president cannot just go to parliament and have that provision changed.
Despite the entrance clause on the 2-term limit for the presidency, Gambian political analyst Frederick Tendeng has some reservations.
My worry is also if later on nobody would change the decision or the provision that make the president only able to run for 2 terms, because this is a trend going in Africa now. We can see that in Guinea-Conakry. It is already a problem in Togo. In Senegal, the debate has started, you know, sparking. So we don't want anything like that to come to the Gambia just after a few years of us getting the Yahya Jammeh out.
President Adama Barrow came to power in December of 2016 after defeating Gambia's former president Yahya Jammeh. Barrow had campaigned on a 3-year transitional rule, but he has since walked away from his promise of relinquishing power in December of 2019.
This is the man who has, you know, the intention to stay very long in power. And this constitution has to make sure that the way it is written is clear, it's unambiguous, and it is for all Gambians and everybody to know that the president cannot go beyond 2 terms. So definitely, Barrow, I can't trust him because he's the one who proved Gambians that he's not trustworthy after changing from 3 to 5 years. And we all know now that he's doing everything to entrench himself, to stay in power.
Seni Marina is the head of communication for Gambia's Constitutional Review Commission.
Our objective here is to provide Gambians with a very progressive constitution, a constitution that will stand the test of time, a constitution that will empower and protect the fundamental rights of Gambians. And I can proudly tell you the objective of that is already been met with Gambians, you know, commending the CRC for coming up with such a very important national document.
Marina says the constitutional draft review process is going to last until December 15. He says the commission is going to tour the country so that rural folks can add their views on the review process. Under the new constitution, there is no entrenched clause that will require the state to extend voting rights to Gambians residing overseas. Gambians possessing citizenships in other countries are also required to renounce their citizenships before they could run for presidential elections. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandiri by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Today is Monday, November 18th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. A member of Liberia's opposition collaborating political parties says the collaboration is building and getting stronger. Senator Abraham Darius Dalan says the collaboration is in the process of finalizing a new agreement that will change the name from collaboration to the Alliance of Political Parties. This, as some members of the collaboration have been accused of fielding their own candidates during elections without approval of the other members. Senator Dalan says the collaboration is not a merger, and as such, none of the 4 parties have lost their individual identity. Senator Dalan stopped by our Washington studio to say that he is in the United States to, among other things, thank those who made his election possible.
There are Liberians in the diaspora, especially in America, who supported our senatorial bid, who look forward to development back home. We came to say thank you and to solicit their support for our programs and our project that will help our people and our country back home.
The election that brought you to power was really captivating. What do you think is the status of the collaborating political parties now?
Well, the collaborating political parties, we are building and getting stronger. Of course, you will hear about some bickerings. When men and women from different ideologies come together under one umbrella, you expect that there will be some sentiments, people coming with their ego, people coming with their ambition and aspiration to merge into one. You will expect that there will be some bickering, but the bickerings should be and are on the issues. We are at the final stage of completing the framework that we put us together so that we know clearly the objective and the goal of coming together. That document will be officially signed, hopefully before the close of this month in Monrovia. And the new name will be the Alliance of Political Parties, not the Collaborating Political Parties.
Now, one concern I've heard is that it seems that some of the parties within the collaboration are going it alone when, say, during election. Is that the case?
No, that hasn't really been the case. Let's take into consideration that we have not merged. So each of the parties or none of the parties has lost its independent identity.
When you talk to people in Liberia, they seem to be feeling the pinch, especially during the holiday season. And they talk to you in terms of what they see as the difficult economic situation in the country.
Right.
There's talk about some people wanting to, the government also wanted to print more money. Have you heard that? And what is your view on that?
Well, the request to print money is not a rumor. It is a request by the president of Liberia. And that request, which was made official, was placed before us as members of the legislature before we took our annual constituency break. And we decided as a Liberian Senate and as a legislature as a whole not to give approval for printing of money until certain structural reforms at the Central Bank of Liberia have been set in place. Additional condition will be that the quote-unquote missing $16 billion issue is logically resolved, including the $25 million U.S. dollars that was said to have been infused in the economy for the purpose of mopping up excess Liberian dollars from the market. So we did not give approbation to that request. As I sit in studio here at VOA in America, I'm getting confirmed report that the president of Liberia has asked the Liberian Senate to return to session for the purpose of giving approval for printing money.
When are you up again for re-election?
2020.
2020. What do you think are your chances of being re-elected?
Well, our work with our people will determine our chances. Yeah. I want to work for my people and then leave the decision to them.
Senator Dillon, it's been a pleasure having you here at the Voice of America and also on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, always, Jimmy.
Ibrahim Darius Dillon is a member of the Liberian Senate and the opposition collaborating political parties. He was speaking with us here in our Washington studio. A Sudanese law expert says some former Sudanese officials could have been involved in money laundering, a crime punishable by law, and that the transitional government should review laws that prevent the flow of money out of Sudan. Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Law expert Abdulgadir Warsama says under the previous regime of President Omar al-Bashir, some top Sudanese officials owned property outside the country, mismanaged natural resources, and enriched themselves at the expense of the Sudanese economy. He says several former officials took money from the government offices and opened bogus companies for their family members to secure government contracts, which is illegal.
All public money should be under the control of the general budget, approved by the government, passed by the parliament, and the general auditor will audit everything. But having some money taken for public use and it is not registered in the proper system, this reaches the stage of money laundering.
Warsama says corrupt former officials damaged the country's economy for 30 years, but if the new leaders enforce anti-corruption policies, natural resources like Gamma Arabic could generate significant revenue for the economy.
There is a loophole that gives such people the opportunity to launder money. This was the general trend in the last regime. So we could say that the general policy of that regime was very loose, so as to give certain people the opportunity to enrich themselves at the cost of others.
Sudan has been under U.S. economic sanctions since 1997. Wadsima says the new transitional government should review the financial system of the Sudanese institutions and hold corrupt officials accountable.
Accountants can help in this. There should be regulations. Lawyers can help in this. Advocates. We need regulations for this.
Wadsima says the new government in Sudan should reform the country's financial institutions all the way up to the central bank. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has been accused of possessing illegal foreign currency and corruption. But one of the Bashir's defense lawyers, Zainal Abidin Muhammad, told South Sudan in Focus last week that the court is yet to announce the final verdict at the end of this month. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Despite the hype in Silicon Valley interest, Nigerian tech entrepreneurs are still struggling with basic business environment, especially unreliable power, according to a new report done jointly by the Center for Global Development and the One Campaign. Vijaya Ramachandra, one of the authors of the report, spoke to Ricky Stryak about differing challenges.
Why is it so difficult? Why is there so much paperwork? The answer seems to be that, you know, in Nigeria, there are not well-developed credit bureaus or ways of determining an entrepreneur's credit worthiness. And to compensate for that, banks and other financial institutions are asking for a lot of data and a lot of paperwork that would enable them to figure out how risky a potential customer is. This seems to be the reason why very few entrepreneurs are able to access finance, and many are deterred from applying for a loan.
How much of these problems are related to wealth inequality?
So wealth inequality influences, I think, many of these results. So larger businesses that are run by wealthier entrepreneurs are able to purchase generators and use those in place of using electricity from the public grid. Also, wealthier business people are able to use their own savings to invest in companies or to grow their companies without having to rely on banks. So this just means that, you know, any existing inequality is sort of exacerbated by the lack of finance available or by the lack of a reliable and cheap source of electricity.
What is being done or needs to be done to help firms access reliable electricity?
So lots of things, I think, can be done. And the Nigerian government has tried to reform the electricity sector to deliver electricity in a more reliable manner. To cut a long story short, Nigeria needs a cost-effective tariff structure. In other words, electricity needs to be priced so that generating companies and distribution companies are able to be profitable and are able to stay in business in order to supply electricity and distribute electricity. That's not happening right now. And so tariff reform is needed. Also, what is needed is to cut the losses from theft of electricity and from illegal use of electricity. I think all of those problems need to be tackled.
And what are some of the bright spots amid the ongoing challenges?
The bright spots are, despite all of these challenges, we are seeing a number of very exciting tech firms emerge in Nigeria. There are some large firms that are attracting attention from foreign investors. For example, Interswitch, a digital payments company, is receiving a $200 million investment from Visa and will likely have an IPO next year.
That was Vijaya Ramachandra, co-author of a report out on Nigerian tech finance. She was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Washington. Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Womale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with match day 2 results in the 2021 AFCON qualifiers. Nigeria came from a goal down to beat Lesotho 4-2 and moved top of Group L in the 2021 African Cup of Nations AFCON qualifiers. The Super Eagles built on from their opening day 2-1 victory over Benin to move to 6 points in their quest to end a spot during the next AFCON being hosted by Cameroon. Elsewhere in Kigali, Cameroon got a nervy 1-0 win against host Rwanda at the Stade Nyamariambo. Elsewhere, Aaron Bopedza and Dennis Bwanga's first half goals were all Gabon needed to beat Angola 2-1 and move top of Group D on Sunday night. South Africa, on their part, responded to their opening day 2-0 loss away to Ghana with a 1-0 victory at home against Sudan. Coach Molefe Nseki and midfielder Tulani Sorero were excited at Bafana Bafana's victory.
All that is important for us was composure, especially when we're about to finish, because if you look at the chances we missed in the first 10 minutes of the game, we could have just tapped the ball in, but we couldn't. So at halftime we said, no, we are creating chances, let's be composed, let's pick the spot and get goals.
We had a tough week, but we had a talk with the boys. We're not going to make excuses, we needed to win this game, and the guys fought today, and we wanted to win in front of our own fans, in front of our own people. So I think it was nice to get a win today.
Meanwhile, in Manzini, AFCON 2019 finalist Senegal defied a storm that halted the game to thrash host Eswatini 4-1 and moved top of Group I with a 100% record. In Kampala, Uganda won 2-0 at home against Malawi. Jonathan McKinstry, head coach Uganda Cranes, says his boys must take all the credit for the Cranes' victory.
For us, I think football's about moments. And I think in those key moments, we took advantage.
Staying with match day two results, Burkina Faso won 2-1 away to South Sudan in Khartoum, while Mali remained unbeaten after picking a clinical 2-0 victory away to Chad. Away from football news, African basketball ladies champions Nigeria and host Mozambique on Sunday night booked the two available quota tickets for the African region to next year's 16-nation Women's Olympic qualifying tournament. The Tigress of Nigeria dismissed Mali 74-59 in yet another showing of dominance to improve their unbeaten record to 16-0 in the past 4 years in Africa, while host Mozambique shocked Senegal 56-49 in a very closely contested game that saw the home crowd cheer every basket, steal and rebound to give their players the resounding energy they needed to emerge victorious. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Guinea's opposition has again told a visiting Economic Community of West African States delegation that it will not negotiate with the government, nor end months of protest until President Alpha Conde meets a number of conditions. The ECOWAS delegation, which visited Guinea late last week, called for dialogue and a peaceful protest. This as there were more deadly protests last Thursday. Faya Milimuno, a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, or the FNDC, says one of the conditions is the immediate freedom of all jailed FNDC members. Milimuno also says another condition is for President Alpha Conde to deliver a nationwide speech, saying he has abandoned his alleged plan to change the constitution. Gambia's Constitutional Review Commission over the weekend released the first draft of that country's new constitution to replace the 1997 constitution, which was approved during former President Yahya Jammeh's rule. Attempt to change presidential term limit is becoming an issue in a number of African countries, but the new constitution restricts presidential term limit to 2 terms. And that is it for this Monday, November 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you a very, very productive week.
I'm Larry London. Don't miss your chance to get the Now 71 CD, including some of the top hit songs of today's biggest stars.
I can't write one song that's not about you. Can't drink with that.
The CD features Billie Eilish as Bad Guy.
So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type.
Lil Nas X, Old Town Road.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride.
And many of the greatest hits. You can only get the chance to win by listening to Border Crossings. tune us in every day at 1500 UTC.